to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, January 8. Hello again, Orion Samuelson joining you from the desert that normally should be a dry desert and a fairly warm desert. But like Wall Street, it has been anything but this week. El Nino is having an impact on the West Coast and inland to Arizona because the Christmas New Year's week, temperatures were 10 to 15 degrees below normal in the valley of Phoenix and Scottsdale. And the second week, well, last Sunday, it started raining, and on again, off again, showers every day this week. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, downtown Phoenix had a couple of inches of hail, and that hasn't happened for a couple of decades here in the Valley of the Sun. So, just like Wall Street, it was a difficult week here in the desert. But let's look at today, let's look at the week on Wall Street, because stocks closed lower again today, ending a volatile week with, get this, their worst five-day start to a year ever in history. Sliding oil prices, lingering worries about the global economy, China getting the blame a couple of days, that all offset some pretty good job growth that was reported today in the January employment report sent out by the Labor Department. All three indices today saw losses moving higher into the close. Now, the market today had opened higher after data showing that non-farm payrolls surged in December. 292,000 jobs added in the month of December, and analysts were expecting the number to come in at 200,000. But that report certainly couldn't keep stocks in positive territory. Then you add to that oil prices falling for a fifth day, Brent oil losing 10% for the week, and the S&P energy sector down this week, ending the day, for example, down 1.3 points. But both the Dow and the S&P 500 had their worst five-day starts in history, with the Dow falling 6.2% for the week, the S&P 500 sliding 6% for the week, and the NASDAQ down 7.3% for the week. Now, several days this week, I would start my business reports with the line, blame it on China, because fears of a slowdown in China and the global economy really frightened investors this week, creating the turbulent start to the trading year. One trader said the start of the year is very poor, and that's got investors on the defensive. He went on to say, in the face of weakening global growth, it's difficult to find reasons to commit money at this point, even if you are bullish. He did say that he expects stocks to rebound from these oversold conditions next week. But the worry factor at the CBOE, the volatility index, VIX, ended up 8.1% Friday at 27.01, its highest close since September 28. And we're looking at some of the stocks today. Gap, for example, down 14% after the apparel retailer reported a larger than expected drop in December same store sales. Container store stocks down 41% to $4.22 a day after the storage products retailer's fourth quarter profit forecast missed estimates. Apple shares, however, snapped their three-day losing streak and were up 0.5% to end the week at $96.96 a share. Volume heavy again today, about 8.9 billion shares changing hands on U.S. exchanges. That's well above the 7 1/3 billion daily average for the past 20 days. So it was indeed a tough week on Wall Street, scaring a lot of investors who have retirement funds invested in the stock market. Again, the December non-farm payrolls, a bright spot. Unemployment remained at 5%, but that number of new jobs added in December, 292,000, add to that another 50,000 that they put on the employment numbers in October and November. So we are showing some recovery, but it certainly wasn't enough to change the direction on Wall Street this week. Now, keep in mind my market rule that has not failed yet. My market rule says prices don't go the same way forever. As a matter of fact, there is always a correction, whether you're selling automobiles, houses, grain, livestock. Prices never go the same way forever. It wasn't all global activity that spooked investors this week. Here in the U.S., wholesale inventories fell more than expected in November amid a push by businesses to reduce a stockpile of unsold goods. And that's the latest indication that economic growth moderated sharply in the fourth quarter. Commerce Department said this morning wholesale inventories dropped 0.3% as inventories of both durable and non-durable goods fell, and October inventories were revised downward to show a 0.3% decline instead of the previously reported 0.1% decline. And now the Federal Reserve Bank at Atlanta is saying that growth in the fourth quarter will come in at 0.8%. And that's down from the previous estimates on the kind of growth that we would see in the fourth quarter. A couple of other items to mention as we go on with the apparent feeling by a lot of consumers that they will do more to trust blogs than they will science. Campbell Soup Company today said it will label all of its U.S. products for the presence of ingredients derived from GMOs, genetically modified organisms. The world's largest soup maker also said it supports the enactment of federal legislation for a single mandatory labeling standard for foods derived from genetically modified organisms, and that it supports a national standard for non-GMO claims made on food packaging. The company, which makes Pepperidge Farm cookies and Prego pasta sauces, said it would withdraw from all efforts by groups opposing such measures. Question I have to ask here, how many ingredients will Campbell's be able to put into their soups? Because whether we like it or not, we have been consuming GMO products for decades, and I have yet to see a death certificate saying that somebody died from consuming GMO food. Again, the point that I have made forever is if we're serious about keeping people from starving to death on this planet, then we need to find ways to produce more on the land we have, because we, as Will Rogers said a century ago, we're not making any more new land, and that means we have to use science to be able to make enough to feed the hungry people of the world. And this is the week that the new U.S. dietary guidelines came out, urging Americans to cut their added sugar and unsaturated fat intake to less than 10% of daily calories. Consumer advocates, however, criticized the recommendations for not providing clear guidance on the need to reduce consumption of meat. These government regulations, which are issued every 5 years, are the roadmap for U.S. dietary policy. Some groups have suggested the recommendations should have better reflected the World Health Organization's view that processed meat can cause cancer. Not that it does, but it can. And Carrie Hammerschlag, senior program manager with the advocacy group Friends of the Earth, said in a statement, the new guidelines by the USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services ignored strong scientific evidence presented by the advisory committee to those two agencies on the need for Americans to eat less meat for health, food security, and environmental reasons. And Carrie goes on to say, the administration has clearly put the financial interests of the meat industry over the weight of the science and the health of the American people. Well, I do have to make a comment on that one, a personal comment. I just wonder every time I see these government orders or rules for what we should eat, I wonder if the people who wrote the Constitution ever thought that this nation would have a government that would tell Americans what to eat, how much to eat, and where to eat it. That's just another way of cutting down personal responsibility, in my opinion, and it's going to continue to be discussed everywhere. But as I have said for a long time, your metabolism is much different than mine, and we deal with foods differently. My father, who ate all of the wrong foods all of his life, working hard on that Wisconsin dairy farm, yeah, those bad foods finally killed him at age 95. Well, so much for the personal comment, because this argument on GMOs and the argument on animal rights and everything else is something we'll be dealing with for a long time, it seems. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack spent the last 6 weeks of the year that just ended more time in airplanes than in his office. He did a great deal of traveling during the last month and a half of the year. And when we come back, we're going to talk to the secretary where he went and why. So stay with us for that when we continue The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack may have spent more time in the air than in the office the last 5 or 6 weeks. Quickly rattle off the places you visited.
Well, it started in Cuba, an opportunity to be the third cabinet member of this administration to visit Cuba. Then traveled to Japan and China for discussions on trade, and then took a little break, and then went to Brussels to talk about the TTIP trade agreement, and then to Paris to talk about climate change. So it's been a hectic couple of weeks, but I think a beneficial couple of weeks for U.S. agriculture.
That China meeting is an annual event, isn't it?
It is. It basically alternates every other year in China. I've got a close relationship with the Chinese ag minister. We still have frustrating conversations with the Chinese at times, especially as it relates to biotechnology. I'm hopeful that our conversation and our personal relationship will result in some approvals to some of the biotech traits that have been waiting approvals in China, because it really creates a situation when innovation here in the U.S. gets stalled because we're not convinced that we can have a global market opportunity, because China has basically been slow in approving these traits, and we've been working with them to try to get them to modernize their system.
Let's talk about Cuba. I have been saying for 3 decades the Cuban embargo just never worked. Do you think we're going to get rid of the embargo and start trading?
Well, we need to. And I would hope that at some point in time there's enough wisdom in Congress to get it done. There's a tremendous opportunity for U.S. agriculture. We at one time had 50% or so of that market, which is a $1.8, $1.9 billion market. Today we have significantly less. Our European friends and our South American friends have been competitive. The way in which we can't provide credit, the way in which our terms and conditions require working through intermediary banks, makes it much more cumbersome and more expensive. They want American product. They need American product. And frankly, they could also provide us eventually with supplies of organic agricultural products, because they haven't really done much with their land. So they would be a prime producer of organic product, which we are now needing. We'd like to be able to create a relationship in agriculture that over time would create a closer relationship with that country and eventually turn an enemy into a friend. I think that's the goal, but it's going to take a while, and it's certainly going to take congressional action getting rid of that embargo.
But I think you're right. Agriculture can open a lot of doors.
You know, agriculture ought to be always a conversation that brings people together, doesn't divide people. We unfortunately find ways in which we sometimes use it as a divider instead of a united opportunity. But I think in this particular circumstance, the warm welcome that we received, I think there's a genuine interest in trying to figure out how we might be closer on agricultural issues.
Did you talk baseball at all?
Well, I did. It was basically the icebreaker. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, and the way the Cubs have recently, and then the White Sox have gotten new players, I'm concerned. So I went down there looking for maybe some talent. I didn't come back with anybody, but I planted the seed.
Well, you know, one of the stories I hear is that Fidel instituted the trade restrictions because he was turned down by the U.S. as a baseball player.
Well, that may be. I remember as a kid the discussion that we had, and obviously the right decisions weren't made. So now it's time to reverse some of those decisions that weren't correct and really get an opportunity for these two countries to get closer.
I have to ask one question that a viewer wanted me to ask the Secretary of Agriculture. When you're in Washington, what is a typical day like for you?
Well, it can vary. A series of meetings, almost 15 to 30-minute blocks of meetings with staff on a variety of issues. Oftentimes I go and give speeches to commodity groups, to organizations that are involved in rural development, to nutrition groups, to school officials, to county and city officials, and those who are involved in conservation and forestry. The breadth of this department requires me to be sort of an expert in so many different things that I have an opportunity to speak in a lot of different venues. So it's giving speeches, it's meeting with staff, and it's trying to figure out ways in which we can improve the work here at USDA. I'm proud of the fact that we're actually operating on a budget that's less than it was when I first became secretary. And it's in large part because of the great work of the folks who work here figuring out ways to do more with less. And we've had record achievements in virtually every mission area, even though the budget is less than it was 7 years ago.
So what time do you get up and what time does your day end?
Well, I usually get to the office sometime a little after 8 o'clock. I have a cup of coffee to get me started. The day probably ends, if you include the work that I do at home, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And that's basically 6 days a week. Saturday mornings, I usually spend 5 or 6 hours taking a look at stuff. Sunday evenings, I usually take a look at what I need to know for the following Monday. So it's a grind, and I think that's one of the reasons why so few people have stayed in a job like this for the time that I have stayed in. I think I'm closing in on Henry Wallace in terms of longevity. There are only two or three other secretaries that have been in this position longer, and I think it's important. The continuity is important, particularly for a bureaucracy, and that's one of the reasons why I have stayed, because I think there's still always work to be done. But the longer you stay, the more institutionalized and cemented the changes that you're making become, and I think the longer impact that you have on rural America. I will tell you, we're having a tremendous impact on rural America. And when this history of this administration is written, I think people are going to be surprised at the level of investment and level of activity in rural parts of this country. It's unprecedented.
Indeed, some good points made by Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, and I don't think we need anything more than market activity this week to realize once again that we are indeed a global economy in the business world and in agriculture, because so much of what happens in other parts of the world have an impact on stock and commodity trade in the United States. Oh, I did say to Secretary of Agriculture, Agriculture Bill Sack. Are you ready to do more than 16 years, or do more than 8 years as Secretary of Agriculture? I said, what if a Democrat is elected president in the November elections and would like to keep you on as Secretary of Agriculture for another year or two? He just looked at me and grinned. We'll be back with more for you on this week's edition of The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The market activity beyond Wall Street this week was also an up-and-down affair. We had a one day of down limit pricing in feeder cattle and live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange before somewhat of a bounce back. And in the grain market, we had our ups and downs. Before we get to that, though, there's one other story I wanted to comment on. Chipotle Mexican Grill, under scrutiny for months over outbreaks of food borne illness linked to its restaurants across several U.S. states, was sued today for allegedly misleading investors about its food safety controls. A civil lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York said the burrito chain failed to disclose that its quality controls were inadequate to safeguard consumer and employee health. And as a result, the company's stock has been battered by the outbreak of foodborne illnesses. Chipotle declined to comment today, but the lawsuit seeks damages on behalf of investors who acquired Chipotle shares from February 2015 to January of 2016. Shares of Chipotle this week fell to their lowest level in 2 years, in more than 2 years, and they are down 35% since the end of October. And in a filing on Wednesday of this week, Chipotle said same-store restaurant sales for December were down 30%. Chipotle is the company with management that tells livestock farmers how to produce the cattle and hogs that ultimately end up as meat products in Chipotle sandwiches. Beginning to look like maybe Chipotle should spend more time on what happens in its kitchen than what happens on livestock farms. So where do we start the second trading week of the year as far as the markets are concerned? Well, let's take a look first of all at the grain market. We ended with a little bit of an increase today, particularly for wheat. The wheat market had a pretty good week, and for the day it gained 9¼ cents. That means come Monday, we'll start the March wheat contract at 4.78½ a bushel. March corn gained 4¾ cents today, so we'll start Monday, $3.57 a bushel. Somebody was asking where December 2016 corn futures are priced. They're at 3.83 after gaining 3¾ cents. Soybeans, the January contract, will start Monday at 8.79½ after gaining 2 cents today. And looking down the road to September soybeans, priced at 8.76¼ after gaining a penny today. Now, after the ups and downs of the livestock market this week, where do we start on Monday? February lean hogs, after gaining 37 cents a hundredweight today, will start the week at $59.92. Live cattle, the February contract, drops 70 cents today and will start the week Monday at $132.82. January feeder cattle will start Monday at $159.22 after dropping $4.60 a hundredweight in today's trade. Spending time in Arizona and at the Arizona National Livestock Show, there is concern on the part of cattle producers as they watch the ups and downs of the cattle market, and particularly the volatility that's in the cattle market, because it makes it difficult to determine what they should do with cattle numbers in the coming years. Back to the Board of Trade for a moment at the CME Group. The CME Group today lowered soybean futures initial margins for speculators by 19%. And that puts the margin at $2,310 per contract. That is down from $2,860 a contract. And those rates are effective now, beginning on Monday in trade at the Chicago Board of Trade. Some other notes in the business world this week. The number of Americans that have signed on to Obamacare at 11.3 million for that number. And, of course, the attempt to take the Obamacare out of our legislation passed Congress, vetoed by the president, and Congress does not have the votes to overcome the veto by the president on that one. American Farm Bureau Federation begins its annual convention on Saturday, and it'll conclude with the final meeting of the Board of Directors on Wednesday. But for all practical purposes, for those who are not on the Board of Directors or officers, the convention will come to a close on Tuesday night. We'll be at the Farm Bureau Convention to cover the highlights. And of course, this year, for the first time in 16 years, there will be a contest for the presidency. And Bob Stallman is not one of the four candidates. After 16 years on the job, Bob Stallman from Texas said, several months ago now, back in the summer, said that he would not be seeking re-election at this year's convention. I talked to Bob at FarmFest in July, shortly after he made that statement, and I said, well, you really surprised me. Have you surprised some other people as well? And he looked at me and grinned, and he said, yeah, I guess it did come as a surprise. So in a week from now, we'll be able to share with you some comments from the new president of the American Farm Bureau. I'm not going to even guess who that might be. With all the talk on the impact China had on the world economy this week, particularly on stocks here in the United States, and getting the blame from a lot of analysts, I do have to say one thing, that from an agricultural standpoint, China continues to play an important role here in the United States for agricultural products, particularly soybeans, because China this week made a purchase of 246,000 tons of soybeans. And that got me to looking back over, well, just the period from Thanksgiving to Christmas. And during that time, China imported 1,370,000 tons of soybeans from the United States. Not only that, but they also imported a large number of soybeans from Brazil. So the soybean buying is continuing. And another report on Chinese buying this year, they are buying corn at bigger amounts than was expected. So it again points out that China and the leadership in China says we cannot afford to have a nation of starving people. So we need to keep our food stocks and our feed stocks high to make sure that that doesn't happen. So the feeling is that we'll continue to sell agricultural products to China. Well, thank you for joining us. Sorry we couldn't have better news for you for the first week of the year, but be with us next week for the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.